rusty gin bottle and the way his eyes crawled over my body, eyeing my chest with no shame. "I need alcohol and clean fabric. Can I walk around the house, see what I can find?"
Bert shook his head with a gleam in his eye. "Do you take me for a fool?"
He pulled out a flask from his boot and handed it to me.
"Here's your alcohol. You can use your tunic. Looks very clean to me."
With false coolness, I took the flask from his hands, his knuckles caked in dirt, and looked over to the injured soldier. I had gone my whole life keeping my power hidden, never letting anyone see exactly what I was able to do. My mother had told me years ago that there would always be people who would try to take advantage of my gift, and that was before the war. Now everyone was suffering all the time, and my ability was even more valuable. There was no way to heal this man without using my abilities. He would be dead within the hour, if not sooner. But I couldn't use my power without Bert seeing. Even if I faked an incantation, my power didn't look like witch magic. There was no earthy wind, no static. It just seeped out of my fingers. Even if Bert wasn't leering behind me, if this broad soldier stood and walked out of the house after an injury like this, I wouldn't be able to credit my excellent surgical skills. A furious shiver ran up my spine at the choice in front of me. But it wasn't really a choice at all. I couldn't let this man die, nor could I let them kill me. I steeled myself. "This will hurt," I said to Broadman. He nodded stoically, and I poured the spirit on his bloody wound and my hands. He groaned in agony, but held still. Then I held my hands over his chest and breathed deeply. Humming while my senses pulsed through the soldier, I felt his organs fuse back together, blood pumping slower, heart rate lowering. The fabric of his skin weaved into fresh, new flesh that bloomed under my palms. My own heart rate slowed, too, adrenaline cooling in my veins and tension unfurling in my stomach. My eyes fluttered open and connected with Broadman's. They were stunned, watching as his body put itself back together like a broken toy. The man's breathing returned to a less frightening pace, and the gash became an ugly, ragged pink scar across his abdomen. I sighed as I closed my eyes, just long enough to gather some courage. All he needed now was a bandage, and I was not going to let the piggish lieutenant humiliate me. In one swift movement, I pulled my tunic over my head, leaving me in a thin, sleeveless camisole. I tried to ignore Bert's searing gaze on my breasts. I wrapped the blouse around the broad man's injury and tied it tightly. Bert stood up behind me and paced contemplatively through my kitchen. He was deciding my fate. I could hardly breathe. I had never felt fear like this. Fear that shook my jaw, my hands, my very bones.
"Thank you, Lieutenant," Broadman rasped, but Bert was still lost in thought.
Broadman turned one weak eye toward me.
"And thank you, girl."
I nodded my head imperceptibly.
"How did you do that? Are you a witch?"
I shook my head. "How are you feeling?" My words came out so soft, I wasn't sure if I had really spoken.
"A lot less close to death."
"All right," Bert snapped. "Let's go find the kid. We'll take the girl with us."
"No, no, no, no." But I couldn't speak, couldn't breathe. Too much terror was coursing through me. It was making my heart race so fast I was close to vomiting on the broad soldier beneath me. I couldn't let them find my family. Bert couldn't be within a foot of Lee. I shot a begging, pleading stare at a Broadman who had the decency to look even more pained than he had when he was dying. But two soldiers were already coming back in to help carry him. I scanned the kitchen. Bert had walked out.
If I was going to run,
This was likely my only shot. Pulse thrumming in my ears, I sprang up and sprinted for the bedrooms. I had a better chance of making it through a window than the front door, with all the armored men waiting outside. The two soldiers shouted at me to stop, their voices deep bellows that rang through my bones, my teeth, but I kept moving, dodging one outstretched hand after another, around the hearth, past the kitchen table, until I threw my mother's bedroom door open. There was the window. Right above her bed, sheets and blankets still rumpled. It smelled like her, sage and sweat and ginger. I was so close, so close, but I was also so tired. Between healing Mr. Doyle, Ryder's shoulder, and the broad man's entire abdomen, I was dizzy and fatigued, my limbs weak, my breath uneven. I pushed my legs as hard as I could, vision blurring, and my fingers finally, finally, just barely grazed the checkered cloth curtains that framed the window until a calloused hand wrapped around my shoulder and yanked me back with immeasurable force, slamming me into his chest. No. No.
She's a right quick one, isn't she?
He said to the panting soldier whom I had narrowly dodged around the hearth.
Stones, yeah,
he heaved, hands on his knees. A scream flew from my throat, furious and wild and dripping with fear.
Enough of that,
the soldier snapped, throwing a dirt-caked hand over my mouth and nose. I couldn't breathe. My arms thrashed wildly, and he released his palm from my face to hold my arms with both hands.
Don't make me knock you out, girl. I don't want to, but I will to shut you up.
I bit down on my tongue, hard enough to hurt. I had to get a hold of myself. Had to. The two soldiers guided me outside, where the rest of the Onyx men had now arrived with their horses. Bleeding stones. Even their horses were terrifying. Pure jet black, with wild and unruly manes, and eyes with no pupils. I couldn't bring myself to look over at where we kept bells and hooves. I didn't want to know if these cruel men had left them alive. I thought of Lee and my mother, what they might see if they came back for me. The blood on the floor. I wrestled away from the soldier behind me, kicking and panting.
Come on, girl. You've had your fun. That's enough.
The soldier behind me pinned me to him, until I fell still. He was so large, so much stronger. And I was so depleted, so afraid, so cold. I just couldn't let them go after Ryder, my mother, Lee. I whipped my face away from the soldier behind me and called out to Bert, who sat atop one of the midnight black horses. Let my family be, and I'll go with you willingly. Bert laughed. And the gruesome noise rang through the night.
Do I look scared of you putting up a fight? Just wait until the king sees you.
His wretched smile gleamed in the pinpricks of moonlight that filtered through the trees, exposing all his yellowed teeth.
Besides, I thought you didn't know the kid.
My stomach threatened to empty itself all over the ground. He's my brother, but you have plenty of coin. How many healers? Willingly means I'll help you, heal you and your men. Can your stolen coin do that? Bert didn't respond, and the soldiers turned to him expectantly. His silence bolstered my courage. If you go after them, I'll never work for you. You can torture me, kill me. I won't do anything if they are harmed. I wasn't sure if it was a bluff or not.
Fine.
It was all he said, so abruptly that I almost forgot to feel relief. Before I realized what he was doing, the soldier behind me tied my wrists together in front of me. The twine was sharp and scratchy on my skin, and my breaths began to come in strange, sharp bursts. I did not like feeling trapped. Heart and head whirling, I was in such shock I couldn't even cry. I was leaving Abington. But not for Garnet, with my family. No, to go to Onyx, alone. the single most dangerous kingdom on our continent, with a herd of the deadliest men I had ever encountered. I wondered absently if the king even knew about his errant lost coin. It seemed doubtful. This felt like a personal mission, orchestrated by a greedy lieutenant, who would return now with a new healer and boast of his findings. Acid rose in my throat. The soldier tugged me behind him as our lethal caravan filed into the night, some on horseback, some on foot. The only thing I could hold on to was the knowledge that my family was going to be safe. They had enough coin now to build a beautiful, safe, new life, and that was all I could possibly want. They deserved it. I trembled again at the enormity of what I'd surrendered myself to. The horrors Bert alluded to. Most likely I was going to be raped, tortured, or killed, if not all three. What in the stones had I done? The cool evening air assaulted my frame, and I remembered how little I was wearing. My face flushed, but with my hands pulled in front of me, I couldn't cover myself. We had been walking in silence for hours. At every hitch of someone's breath or errant comment among the men, my stomach dropped. Sure, they'd decided to kill me after all. Once in a while, one of the soldiers would actually say something to another, and I'd strain to hear. But for the most part, these men were noiseless and focused, like well-trained beasts. I'd stopped recognizing anything, and all the trees and branches were beginning to look the same. I had also stopped wondering if these men ever planned to set up camp for the night. I'd seen a handful of maps in my life, especially when I was young and in classes. And from what I recalled, Onyx was as far across the continent as was possible without crossing the Mineral Sea. I could only imagine we would be traveling for months, and my feet protested at the thought. These men had no gear, no campsite, no carriages. How would they survive? How would I? None of them even seemed tired. They were truly a different breed. The soldier who bound me had taken to dragging me along behind him as my fatigue set in. Mentally, I was exhausted, and physically, I was getting there. When I stumbled over a few dead branches, he looked back at me with what was either pity or disgust. It was hard to tell through his helmet of bone and steel. "Soon," was all he said. It only made me feel worse. Just as I was sure my body was mere minutes from giving out, we came to a glade. It must have been well past midnight. The stretch of dirt and straw was coated in a dim haze of night, and I had to squint to see where I was going. My feet and ankles and calves protested at each step, so sore that even standing still ached. The men came to a stop and looked around at one another in anticipation before I heard it. Like the bang of a mighty drum or the crash of waves on an angry sea, a thunderous sound pierced the night. I startled and scanned the clearing for whatever monster must have made such a noise, but saw nothing in the surrounding trees. The thuds grew louder, a deafening beat reverberating in my skull. Wind spun around us, blowing dust into my hair and face. With my hands tied, I could only screw my eyes shut and listen with unbridled fear as the noise grew louder. I was almost grateful to be surrounded by these men who felt more like weapons. Not that anyone's first intention would be to save me, but with them around, I had a better shot at surviving whatever this thing was. The ground shook as the creature landed on the grass ahead of us, lifting dirt up around me in clouds. I coughed, the rumble from the earth reverberating through my weakened knees and ankles. The woody blend of fir and crisp cedar wood stung my nose. When the dust settled, I opened my eyes. Before me stood the most terrifying animal I had ever seen. Not an animal, but a beast. A monster. A full-grown, pitch-black dragon covered in pointed, shimmering scales. More frightening, ancient and powerful than anything I could have conjured from a book or children's story. It stretched its massive, bat-like wings, tipped by silver talons, exposing a glittering silver underbelly. A barbed sable tail swung softly back and forth across the dirt. The lieutenant approached the beast with no fear, and to my shock, appeared to speak to the gargantuan creature. I gawked. Not a monster then, but a pet. The Onyx Kingdom had pet dragons? I considered the other men, but none seemed frightened. They weren't even surprised. Rather, they made their way with ease onto the creature's back, which was long enough to have fit double the group if necessary. When the soldier pulled me forward, I let out a small whine and dug my feet into the ground. I didn't even realize I was doing it. I wanted to be a brave, dragon-climbing girl, but alas, the night's events must have drained my reserves of courage. He yanked me closer, despite my protests, until I was beside its sprawled right claw. The four sharpened nails were stained with a rusty red that I was going to pretend wasn't blood. I willed my eyes to look anywhere else.
"It's all right. The beast won't hurt you,"
Broadman said from his sprawled position on the back of the dragon, one hand pressed to his wound. I nodded, but my mouth tasted like acid. The soldier finally untied my wrists so I could hoist myself up.
"Don't try anything smart, girl."
I was too exhausted to run anyway. Not really anywhere for me to go. The dragon's scales felt cool and smooth under my palms as I hauled myself up, getting a better look at its reptilian eye, blazing orange and ringed with gray. The dragon's gaze shifted to me and seemed to soften imperceptibly. It blinked once and cocked its head slightly. The simple act was so innocuous, so disarming, that I relaxed ever so slightly. Once settled, I rubbed my aching wrists, which were torn and bleeding where the twine had been. My eyes landed on the back of the creature, toward the tail, where a huddled lump was wrapped in burlap, dotted with scarlet stains. A single onyx boot stuck out from underneath. Unease twisted low in my stomach. There was a dead body on this beast with us. I looked to Broadman again. Something horrible must have happened tonight. Somewhere between Broadman's wound, the blood on the dragon's claws, and the corpse aboard was a story that I did not wish to piece together. I tried to be grateful that at least nothing had punctured my torso. Yet. Once all the soldiers had boarded, I barely had a moment to look back toward my town, my entire life, before the beast shot into the air. All of the breath ripped from my lungs as we soared upward. The air was thin and icy, and my eyes filled with water as cold night whipped at my face. I held on to the creature's ridged scales for dear life and hoped I wasn't hurting it with my vice grip. The wind stung my eyes, and I looked away from the skies and back to the soldiers. They seemed at ease now, some lying back against the dragon's outstretched wing, others with a casual arm wrapped around a talon. My gaze landed on Bert, only to catch him watching me with intent. Not just sexual, though his eyes were lascivious, too. But it felt more like he was boring into my soul, like he was mesmerized. A furious shiver ran up my spine. He had seen my powers. That left me even more exposed than the camisole. I shrank in on myself and trained my eyes away from his nasty face. We sailed higher and higher, rising above the clouds. From up here, my world seemed even smaller than I had thought possible. This must be how the Onyx soldiers got around the continent so easily. I wondered how they didn't catch my brother sooner. The thought of him and the rest of my family made my heart seize up. I was never going to see them again. I clenched my jaw, teeth straining. I could not break down right now. I had to hold it together until I had the right opportunity, and then I would allow myself to fully fall apart. Now would be a great time for that optimism I'd been told I had in spades. But I feared there was no positive spin for flying via massive horned dragon as a prisoner into enemy territory. I looked down at the land below me, cloaked in darkness, and watched the only life I'd ever known disappear from sight. 4. A belt cracked on my back, quickly replaced by my hands, deep inside a bloody, gaping chest wound. An orange, glowing eye peered at me, gazing into my soul. Power I couldn't describe tingled in my fingertips, in my bones, in the corners of my memory. I jolted awake. The darkness around me was disorienting. I could almost make out the organic shapes of leaves and trunks and vines, but everything was cloaked in shades of blue and black, barely lit by moonlight. Bodies shuffled around me one by one, and I suddenly remembered where I was and what had happened. Disorientation morphed into an onslaught of growing dread. Horror churned in my gut and tightened in my jaw, in my bones. Broadman, who was now moving at a steady, slow pace, much to the shock of his fellow men, nudged me forward, and I dismounted from the beast, my limbs moving before my mind instructed them to. Without realizing it, I touched the long neck of the creature, steadying myself on shaking legs. Its peculiar eyes darted to me, and I mustered a weak smile. "Don't eat me," was all that came to mind. I had the vague, deluded thought that I was probably in shock. Only then did I notice the unbearable chill. It was much colder here in the north, and my body was covered in goose flesh, my lips and nose going numb. The rest of the soldiers had walked ahead into the darkness, uninterested in the newly captured girl. A small mercy, maybe. Broadman wrapped the twine around my wrists once more, and I grimaced at the raw skin being abused again in the same spot. A sound like lightning cracking startled me, and I turned just in time to see the creature take off into the skies, dirt flying into my eyes. By the time I pried them open again, I couldn't make the dragon out in the dark above any longer. Gone just as quickly as it had appeared, it was as if I had fabricated the creature out of my own imagination. Except I never could have crafted something so disturbing. I stared after the beast, into the textured darkness of night and forest and trees, my only way back home gone. Broadman jerked me forward, and my wrists wailed in response. But I shuffled forward, one foot after the other, Bert and Broadman before me, two of the soldiers carrying the burlap-wrapped body behind us. All I could see in the slivers of moonlight were gnarled trees and lush greenery that came up to my shins as I stamped through. We were clearly not in Willow Ridge, the capital of the Onyx Kingdom. There was no city, no life, no noise. Just a forest of some kind. The smell of damp moss, lilac, and night-blooming gardenia filled my nostrils. Different from any forest I had been in. No sweet spice or pumpkin or familiar decay of falling leaves. I had only ever been in forests that were endlessly brown and golden, or bare of leaves altogether. This wet, foggy enclave was already unlike anything I had seen or felt. All oaks and pines, cold and floral and crisp. For a single nonsensical moment, I could almost forget where I was, how I had ended up here. My eyes were slowly adjusting to the night. We rounded a great, knotted willow tree, and in the distance loomed an imposing stone castle, with hundreds of lit-up tents in the fields surrounding it. They were a cacophony of wartime colors, like a handful of mismatched jewels, each a different size and shape, pitched alongside and on top of each other, like picnic blankets on a summer day, haphazard and overlapping. What was this?
We walked farther, and I finally heard something other than the crunch of our feet on the dirt, the sounds of people and music. A wave of dread crashed over me. It was more than just a castle or fortress, but rather an entire keep, almost like a gated village of its own. The hold was bordered on every side by the twisted woods we had traipsed through, no way in or out without making it across these haunted trees and vines and roots. No sign of life in any direction past the woods. Internally, I cursed myself for falling asleep on our ride here. A bird's eye view would have been helpful. But the come down from both the adrenaline of anxiety and then exertion of my powers on Ryder and the broad man had been a sedative I couldn't fight. Vast iron gates appeared through the maze of trees, creaking open for us as we approached. I allowed Broadman to pull me through, my eyes glued to the rolling land and castle before me.
"Welcome to Shadowhold, girl,"
Bert said, before striding ahead of the pack. I shuddered. As we walked along the road that bisected the sprawl of canvas tents within the castle gates, it dawned on me. This must be the Onyx Army outpost, as evidenced by the blacksmith tables, cooking pots, and hung-up armor I spotted throughout the encampment. As we drew nearer, I noticed a few small cottages and huts to our left, and stables to our right. Most must have been asleep, but a few soldiers were playing the lute and drinking by a crackling fire. Some looked up at the body being carried behind us, or at my half-clothed form, but all kept their eyes averted from their lieutenant. I shivered against the freezing night and tried to wrap my arms tightly around myself before remembering they were bound. The longing to be back with my family was a greater pain than I had ever felt, far worse than any of Powell's beatings. It welled up inside of me, threatening to bring me to my knees at any moment. What would they do then? Drag me along the dirt as I sobbed? Yes, that's exactly what would happen. I almost choked on the desperation. I wanted to be anywhere but here. Anywhere. My feet toed along the gravel and dirt, dust forming a thin layer on my ankles, as Broadman hauled me forward and my eyes pulled up to the castle before me. It was like nothing I had ever seen before. This was the most chilling, twisted, somehow awe-inspiring fortress I could have imagined. The all-stone stronghold was a feat of Gothic architecture, with towering turrets and strong stone pillars. Stained glass windows glinted in the darkness, eerie in their glass depictions of war and brutality, a strange contrast to the warmth that radiated from within them. Inside, the light cast shadows in their frames that moved fluidly, like specters. The exterior, dotted by large black torches and a few heraldic flags showing the Onyx crest, only bolstered my assumption that the keep was the Onyx army base. We reached the massive wooden doors, and my teeth clenched as I steeled myself. Broadman tugged me once again, and my wrists lit with agony, pulling a strange whine from my lips. Bert eyed me with a twisted, delighted gleam.
"Come, girl, you can stay with me tonight."
Horror blurred my vision. I couldn't think of anything to say to save myself.
"Lieutenant, I think Commander Griffin wished to see us upon our return. I can throw the girl in the dungeons for now," Broadman offered.
Bert considered his soldier, then, annoyed, gave a gruff nod. I heaved a small sigh of relief. I didn't know if the broad man was trying to help me or if it had just been dumb luck, but I was more grateful than I had been all day when Bert stalked off toward the castle. Broadman pulled me away from the doors, and we filed past more guards
and through a gate that led down a spiral of cobbled stone stairs. Dread awoke inside my chest anew, and my mouth went bone dry.
No, no,
I begged, pulling away from the shadowed cellar, but the broad man didn't seem to hear me, or to care. Inside, the dungeon was dark and stale, and reeked of brackish water and human filth. The incessant, slow drip of liquid echoed through the stairwell. Lanterns lit up a hallway filled with iron cells below us, and my heart jumped into my throat.
No, wait, I pleaded again. I can't go in there.
Broadman gave me a curious look.
I'm not going to harm you. It's just a place to lay your head until the lieutenant decides what to do with you.
I tried to get my breathing under control.
I just can't be locked in. Please, where do the healers stay?
Broadman huffed and pushed me down through the dizzying stairwell. My lungs were collapsing in on themselves, and by the time we reached the bottom, I could hardly breathe. He pulled me behind him and along the maze of cells. The hoots and hollers of foul-mouthed prisoners, paired with my heartbeat thundering in my ears, became a vulgar symphony. I tried again in vain to cover myself. Broadman opened a cell door wide and shoved me in, tearing off my bindings. I stumbled, catching my palms on the rough, dirty stone beneath me. It was even smaller inside than it had looked. I spun, racing back toward the iron bars.
Wait!
I yelled, but he was halfway down the hall, and the cell was locked. I heaved out a sob and backed into the corner, sinking down and bringing my knees to my chest. My head was swimming, my breath coming in irregular, uneven gasps. I tried to remember what Mother had taught me all those years ago when I panicked, but my mind was in shambles. Maybe now was the aforementioned time to fall apart. How did this all happen? I tried to replay the evening's events in my head, and it only hurt more. I finally gave in to the tears I had been holding back all night. They burst out of me and trickled in streams down my cheeks, splattering onto the floor. My wails were loud and choked, like a child's. I wished I was more like Ryder. I hadn't seen him cry more than twice in our whole lives. Once when he was 15, when he fell off our roof and broke his kneecap. Again when his father, Powell, died 7 years ago. My stepfather died of a stroke, and when Mother told us, Ryder sobbed for days. His father was his best friend, and Powell worshipped his only son. Powell and I never had that kind of relationship, though. I wasn't sure if his hatred for me was born out of knowing I wasn't his, or because I wasn't strong like Ryder. But either way, he carried a rampant disdain for me that I was shocked nobody else could see. Unlike Ryder, I cried all the time. I cried when Lee made me laugh too hard. I cried when I saw my mother in pain. I cried at the end of a great book or when I heard a beautiful harmony. I cried when I lost a patient at the infirmary. I cried when I felt overwhelmed. It was the least brave quality, to be sensitive and fearful and full of tears. But I let them flow freely now. I sobbed for my family that I'd never be with again. For my stupid, rash decision to trade my life for theirs. I didn't regret it, but I hated that it had to happen, that I hadn't been able to come up with anything smarter. I cried for my future here, which I knew would be painful at best, short at worst. I tried to steel myself against a number of torments, which only made my mind run wild. What if they simply never let me leave this cell, and I was trapped for eternity? The unmistakable cry of a man in desperate pain clanged through the dungeon walls. I scanned the cells I had been dragged past, but almost all the other prisoners were sleeping. The cry for help, for anybody, please, rang out again. There must have been another annex nearby for torture. I pressed my palms to my ears tightly, but couldn't drown out his sobs and pleas. It sounded as though he was being ripped in half. I gulped and choked on air, panic back in full force. I was suffocating. Maybe I was dying. My mind was a clash of crawling dread and frantic energy, thoughts flitting from one to the next with no time to catch them. I was dizzy and panting, bracing myself against the stale floor beneath me.
Definitely dying.
I had to get out of here. Right now. What had my mother told me to do? Why couldn't I remember? Was it...
Three things. That's what she had called it. Find and focus on three things you can name.
I could do that.
One, cobwebs. I spied cobwebs and mold atop the low ceiling of my cell. It smelled like mildew and damp, trapped air. I sucked in a lungful of it.
Two, lanterns. A few weak, flickering lanterns hung outside my cell. I couldn't feel the warmth of the flames, but the dim shafts of light cast shadows on the murky, wet floor.
Three. I looked around my small space and saw two buckets, one empty and one filled with water.
Three.
Buckets. I doubted either were clean, but I scrambled up and splashed my face. The freezing cold water knocked the wind out of me, but the shock helped my system. I sat back on my heels and breathed a little easier.
Bleeding stones.
I put my head between my knees.
Quite the mouth on you.
A voice, at once like thunder and a caress, purred through the iron bars beside me. I whipped my head up. In my terror upon being thrown into the cell, I hadn't realized there was another prisoner in the one directly next to me. We were only separated by rusty metal bars. I flushed. I'd had an audience for the most horrifically unpleasant moment of my life, and based on the continued cries of the person being tortured in some other wing of this dungeon, it was likely one of the last few.
Sorry,
I mumbled.
It's just a little dramatic, don't you think?
The dark voice said. My skin bristled. I squinted through the flickering shadows, but couldn't see more than the outline of a figure slumped against a wall.
I said I was sorry. What more do you want?
I was still trying to catch my rushed breaths. Immediately, I regretted my harsh tone. I couldn't make an enemy of the man I'd be trapped next to for who knew how long. He was probably a thief, or a murderer, or something far, far worse. But the prisoner only chuckled, the sound like the rumble of rocks down a mountain, reverberating in my chest.
Some peace and quiet from your weeping would be nice.
As expected, but still. What a prick. This time I didn't bother hiding my glare. I didn't know if he could even see me in the darkness. I'm done now, I admitted, drawing in a long breath. It's not every day you get imprisoned.
Or maybe it is for you, but not for me.
Please leave me alone. Please leave me alone.
I'm just saying, some of us are trying to get some sleep around here. Your theatrics and heaving bosom aren't going to change your situation.
He paused.
Though the latter is nice to look at.
My stomach turned at his words. Did I say prick? I meant bastard. Vile bastard. I had no reason to fight with him, and I shouldn't anger him. I had better survival instincts than that. But I had been through too much tonight. I didn't have a single straw left in me.
You're disgusting,
I breathed.
Someone's feeling brave with these bars between us.
Not really, I admitted. Just honest. The conversation was a strange yet welcome distraction to my anxiety. Being alone with my thoughts sounded worse than almost anything.
The tortured man's wails had finally turned to whimpers. I hoped for his sake he might pass out soon. Now I heard only rustling as I watched the figure in the cell beside me stand up and stretch. His shadow alone was imposing, at least a foot and some change taller than me, but the dim light hid the rest of his features. He stalked toward the bars that separated us. I fought the instinct to scramble backward and away from him, reminding myself that he couldn't reach me in here. I had to have some kind of backbone, especially if this was to be my future.
Are you trying to scare me?
I was aiming for bold, but it came out low and quiet.
Something like that, he whispered through the bars.
My heart leapt into my throat at his words, his voice soft and yet so deadly, my toes curled in fear. I still couldn't make out his face among the shadows, but I could see his sharp white teeth glinting above me in the lantern's buttery light.
Well, you don't.
Scare me, that is. He laughed, but it felt cruel.
Such a brave bird. Good to hear. Perhaps now I can sleep.
What?
But my thoughts were now flowing in a calm, even rhythm compared to the frenetic mess they had been before. My panic had subsided. I took a soothing lungful of damp, dungeon air and turned my eyes back up to the prisoner bathed in shadow beside me. Had he known what he was doing when he was goading me? Definitely not, but the distraction had kept me from falling apart completely. Still, I couldn't help glaring at him. Your cruelty is a bit cliche. He heaved a sigh that sounded suspiciously like a laugh and crouched down. Finally, the lantern outside his cell illuminated his face. At first, all I could see were his eyes, piercing, slate gray, and so bright they were nearly silver. They simmered under thick, prominent brows and obscenely long lashes. His dark hair had fallen casually across his forehead, and he coolly brushed it out of his face with a strong, broad hand. Perfect chiseled jaw, full lips. It was indecent, frankly, how gorgeous he was. Gorgeous, indecent, and deadly. A chill ran through my entire body. I felt more afraid now than I had all evening, and that included a literal ride through the skies on the back of a dragon. But despite the warning bells going off in every cell of my body, I couldn't look away. He watched me examine him. There was a glint in his eye that I couldn't stop staring at. He smirked a bit, and I came back to myself, heat reddening my cheeks.
Why? Because I'm imprisoned?
What?
I tried to shake off whatever was clouding my mind.
The cliche, as you said.
Yes.
I lifted my chin. I had read enough books. Cruel, dark prisoner, it's done to death.
He grasped at his heart in mock insult. You wound me. Couldn't I say the same of you?
I pursed my lips, and he grinned slightly. He was right, of course, but I didn't want to share my sob story, how I wasn't actually a criminal like him, with this lethal, terrifying, profanely handsome stranger. When he realized I wasn't going to offer any insight into my own situation, he sighed.
You'll have to buck up a bit, Bird. You're an onyx now. It's not all mud-colored hair, ruddy cheeks, and squash farmers. Bastards like me are the least of your concern.
His voice carried an edge that stripped his words of any playfulness, and I couldn't help the shiver that slipped down my spine. How do you know I'm from Amber? He looked me over through the bars. Briefly, stupidly, I wondered how I must have appeared to him, stuck in a grimy cell, shivering, feet and bare legs caked in dirt, hair a tangled mess, lips blue. Ugh. I crossed my arms over myself when I remembered how little I was wearing, the flimsy camisole, and what the cold had done to my chest. His jaw ticked slightly.
What happened to the rest of your clothing?
I squirmed under his unrelenting gaze, my face flushing. It's a long story. His expression was calm, but his eyes had gone black.
I've got time.
The last thing I needed was this dangerous prick knowing about my humiliation at the hands of Onyx's lieutenant. I had to use my blouse to help someone. That's all. He nodded with skepticism, but the intensity had cleared from his eyes. I shivered, an awkward convulsion against the chill in the air.
Are you cold?
Yes, I admitted. You aren't?
I must be used to it.
I wanted to ask how long he had been down here and what he was in for, but I was leery of this strange, imposing man. His presence was almost too much to bear.
Here,
he offered, taking off his fur cloak and slipping it through the railing.
I can't listen to your teeth chattering a minute longer. It's grating on the nerves.
I hesitated, but survival instincts kicked in before pride. I took it from him, wrapping it around myself in one swift motion. The cloak was scented like cedarwood, whiskey, and velvety leather. And warm, so warm. I almost whimpered as the heat enveloped my freezing arms and legs. Thank you. He watched me as my eyes fluttered closed, calmed by the warmth and heavy weight of his cloak. Even then, I could feel his eyes on me, and my skin itched under his gaze. For some bizarre reason, I couldn't stand the silence. Well, I'm not crying anymore. I'll try to keep it down. But he didn't crawl back to his corner to sleep. Rather, he unfolded one leg out in front of him and brushed a large hand through his hair, sweeping it out of his face.
Trying to get rid of me?
Yes, I admitted.
She uses me for my fur and then kicks me to the curb. Women. I rolled my eyes, but I knew better than to be charmed.
Obscene beauty or not, this man was locked up in an Onyx Kingdom stronghold dungeon. I just had to balance on the razor's edge between angering him and letting down my guard. Just practicing some self-preservation. You could be dangerous.
True, he mused. I could be. For what it's worth, I wouldn't care if you were dangerous.
I raised a skeptical brow and wrapped the fur around me tighter. What's that supposed to mean? He gave a crooked grin and shrugged.
You're much too alluring. I'd just have to take my chances, and if you killed me...
He leaned in a bit.
Well, it would be a good death.
I pressed my shoulder to my mouth to suppress a laugh. I think you're a shameless flirt who has been down here alone for too long. Like a beast that likes to play with its prey. He shook his head with self-deprecation, but the mirth had drained from his eyes. The realization that I may have struck a nerve sent a chill through my bones, and I scooted away from his shadowed form.
If I'm a beast, so are you.
He gestured with his broad hands to the cells that held us both. For some reason, I felt tears spring to my eyes. The simple reminder was all it took. Stones, I was so weak. The only thing we might have in common is a shared hatred for the wicked Onyx King that shackled us both in here.
What's wrong with our king?
His use of our answered one of my questions. So, he was from Onyx. Maybe that explained the aura of darkness that rippled off of him. I tried to bite my tongue. I really did, but it was a sore subject. Besides decimating an innocent kingdom for their meager wealth and causing thousands upon thousands of innocent lives to be lost, I asked, or training his soldiers to be more brutal, bloodthirsty, and violent than any other army in Evendel? Or what about his famed love of gleeful torture, senseless death, and ruthless gore? It seemed the cell I was in was not so great for my bedside manner. His mouth lifted in a smile.
Sounds like you're afraid of him.
I am. You should be too. I shook my head. Defending the very king who chained you up,
King Ravenwood's soldiers slaughtered all of my brother's men. He was lucky to have made it out alive.
Yes, Bird, I've heard that does happen during wartime.
Don't be glib.
Don't be naive.
I stifled a groan, another sore subject. I snapped my mouth shut before insults flew out. Maybe it was time to put an end to this deadly tightrope walk of a conversation. I moved farther away and turned to face the empty cell on my other side. But he sighed from behind me, resigned.
I shouldn't expect you to understand, Bird.
Bleeding stones. I spun to face the bars again, ready to ask why he was so intent on talking to me all night when all he had wanted was sleep, but was caught off guard by the way his eyes bored into me. Eyes like endless pools of liquid silver flickered with something far more intense than I had expected. Why do you keep calling me that? It wasn't what I had planned to say, but came out nonetheless. For the first time, he faltered, and the intensity behind his eyes vanished as quickly as I had seen it.
I'm actually not sure, he said, laughing to himself. He looked down at his boots. Just feels fitting.
He met my eyes.
Perhaps given the cage.
I gave him a look that said, oh, right, that, and closed my eyes again. Well, this has been peachy, but unless you have some way out of here, I'm going to try to sleep now. I'm sure we can continue this tomorrow, and the next day, and the eternity after that. I aimed for biting, but all fiery retorts and energy for banter had dissolved. The reality was worse than bleak. I was alone, exhausted, and more terrified than I could endure for long. I had nothing left in me tonight. Maybe tomorrow I'd figure out how in the world to get out of this keep, this kingdom, this whole mess I was in. But tonight, I could only slump against the wall and let my eyes flutter closed. As I drifted off to sleep, I thought I heard the stranger whispering in hushed tones to someone else. I fought to stay awake and listen in, but my mind and body were too drained. Sleep came for me, swift and unyielding, against the muted sounds of men arguing. 5. I woke up sore and stiff, but otherwise unscathed. A few whispers of sunlight poured in through the window above me, but moments later, the cloud cover was back, casting the cell in gloom. I tried to imagine the sun on my face. Yesterday's events had felt like some kind of sickened fever dream, but awakening to the damp stone around me was as grounding as being slapped across the face. I was going to have to find some way out of here. No more blubbering. No more tears of any kind, actually. I steeled myself for the day ahead. Unmistakable curiosity getting the best of me, I peered into the cell to my left. My eyes widened, and my body went rigid to find it empty. The man from last night was gone. How had I not heard him be released? No bars clanking or soldiers escorting him out? Could the argument last night have been between the stranger and a soldier? I hadn't heard any footsteps come toward us. I tried to peer farther through the bars into the cell on the far side of the stranger's. Was there anyone in there that he could have been fighting with? I couldn't tell. Did he escape? Or... My blood turned to ice at the new thought. An execution might have been silent. I felt a pang in my heart at the thought of his strong, tall frame hanging by a noose inside the castle gates. Or worse, his severed head on a spike. The thought of my head next to his followed. If it happened to him, it could very well happen to me. I physically shook the dreadful images from my head. I stared up at the gray, cracked stone ceiling, preparing for a day of being trapped in a damp cell, attempting to keep horrific thoughts and crippling panic at bay.
The sound of footsteps making their way down the dungeon hall drew my attention back. It was the broad man, and he was heading toward me. I ripped off the fur cloak and shoved it with shaking hands under the bench to my left. By the time I looked up, he was working my cell door open. The lock was old and rusted, and took an extra pull for him to wrench it free.
"Good morning," he offered.
His face had gained some color back overnight. He looked much more alive than he had when he brought me down here. I scrambled back as far into the wall behind me as I could. "What's going on?"
"You're needed."
I prayed to the stones that I was needed to heal someone, and not by the lieutenant. I tried to stay positive. At least I was leaving the cell. He handed me a simple black dress and some aromatic dark brown bread. My stomach grumbled at the smell. Surprisingly, Broadman turned to give me privacy. I crammed a mouthful of bread in before shedding my amber clothes with lightning speed and slipping on the black dress. It smelled of lilac soap. "Thank you," I said when I was decent. The broad man turned, his eyes kind as they appraised me. I swallowed some fear and gestured toward his abdomen. "How are you feeling?"
"Better than I thought possible, thanks to you."
He smiled awkwardly.
"I'm Barney. Sorry about last night. For what it's worth, I didn't want to take you from your home."
"Somehow, it's fine, don't worry about it, Barney. These things happen," didn't find its way out of my mouth. "What happened to you anyway?" I asked instead. He shook his head.
"You first. What kind of magic was that?"
If only I knew. There was something warm in Barney's eyes, though. A hint of a smile pressed at my lips. "I guess we'll both keep our secrets." The walk out of the dungeon seemed shorter than the one inside last night. I followed Barney into the courtyard and immediately sucked in a wonderful lungful of fresh morning air tinged with the smell of rain. It was cloudy and frigid out, and once again I remembered how much chillier the north was. The fox fur cloak, courtesy of the dungeon stranger, was much warmer than my new black wool dress, with its leather corset and puffed antique sleeves. The dark realization that the stranger probably wouldn't need his fur anymore only made me shiver harder. It was still early, and the castle grounds were quiet. I assumed everyone was sleeping, save for the sentries that manned the premises. I followed Barney through the large, wrought iron castle doors and was greeted by the smells and sounds of a keep just waking up. Fresh bread baking somewhere in the kitchens, floors being scrubbed with various lavender and vanilla soaps. For an early morning, the keep's inhabitants were working overtime to make sure every surface shone and every window gleamed. The castle was devastating in its haunting beauty. Having never been inside one before, I couldn't help my wonder. Shadowhold was still terrifying, eerie and gothic, like ghosts inhabited every shadowed corner and lurked behind every trap door. But there was no denying the majesty of it. Complex, sweeping stonework contrasted with the soft light that billowed through warped windows of colorful glass. Barney must have noticed my awe because he seemed to purposefully walk slower so I could take it all in. Dusty blue and violet tapestries, rich, velvety green curtains, dark wood tables and chairs scarred with years of wear, marble vases filled with the strangest flowers I had ever seen adorned the great hall as we walked through it. Spindly, sorrowful-looking things, twisted vines and dark hues that set them apart from what grew in amber. My mother would love them, if I ever saw her again to tell her of them. We trudged up a carved stone staircase that wound around the keep, creating several little candlelit alcoves, and came to a stop in front of a door on the second floor, across from the gallery. A worn wooden sign read, "Apothecary and Infirmary," and hung lopsided against the wood. fleeting relief crammed my heart back into my chest. Not torture nor instant death. Not the perverse lieutenant. This I could do.
This is where you will work. I'll stay outside to keep an eye on you, so don't do anything that would require the lieutenant.
He said it like a warning, but I read a plea in his expression as well.
I'll take you back to the dungeon when the day is done.
I nodded, though the thought of the iron bars of the cell closing in on me sent dread skittering down my spine. I'd have to save that panic for later. Barney thought for a moment and added,
Our king is a man of justice. If he cannot persecute your brother for what he stole, he will take from you instead. Don't give him a reason to take more than your trade.
Thank you, Barney. Barney closed the door behind me, and I drew in a deep breath as I appraised the apothecary. The wood-floored room had huge windows behind the counter that looked out onto the dizzying array of oaks and elms surrounding the keep. Strips of sunlight drifted in lazily, highlighting the specks of dust that floated through the musky air. It smelled of arrowroot, lemongrass, and other salves, a mix of sweet, fragrant, and medicinal that I found strangely comforting. Rows and rows of shelves, filled with various herbs and ointments, took up most of the space, with a few nooks and crannies for more bizarre objects from around the continent, very few of which I had seen before. Of course, I didn't plan to tell anyone that. I'd have to put my abysmal lying skills to the test if asked about anything in here, lest I be deemed useless to the castle. What would they do then? Kill me? Hunt my brother down again? I doubted the Onyx soldiers would be able to track down my family now, especially if they made it to the Garnet Kingdom. I winced at the irony. If King Ravenwood's men couldn't find my family, it was unlikely I would ever be able to either.
Hello? In here,